Wait. I thought it was at 6 o'clock. It's five. If it's live, let's go, my friend. I'm ready.
Okay. We're recording now, if that's okay with you.
Go ahead.
Why don't you start out a little bit by telling the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'll make it as brief as I can. Little Ralph Epperson graduated from the U of A, University of Arizona, and didn't know anything about anything. So I went to California for my first job after college and voted in the 62 election. And then I said, gee, I need to know more about California politics because I'm from Arizona. So I joined the Young Republicans, and I met a young man named Jim, and Jim had turned my life around. He said, why are you here, Ralph? And I said, I'm here to learn more about California, how to vote for, and yes on which propositions, and no on the others, and which judge. No, you're not. You're here to read. I said, no, I'm not. He gave me a book to read called None Dare Call It Treason. Mm-hmm. I read that book, and you talk about someone just hitting a turning a corner. That was it. I read that book and said, this guy's right. And that started the whole process of reading now over 1,100 books. And I've written four myself, and we'll talk about those later as we go, maybe. And then I've done a bunch of DVDs. I was asked to appear on the History Channel twice, and I've done that.
Wow.
Every once in a while, they keep showing those programs. I've toured the country in a book tour in 1985 to 87, 91 cities and 31 states, and if I spoke to an average audience of 100, that's nearly 10,000 people heard me and paid for me to speak about a conspiracy. And that's perhaps started at least the public display of discussion of conspiracy. And I did it with my first book, The NCNN, which was written in 85. So 85 to 87, I toured the country. I did book signings, and I did press conferences and interviews for the 6 o'clock news and the 10 o'clock where it was, and just started convincing. Then I taught at a community college part-time, and I taught them conspiracy. I was paid by the state of Oregon to teach conspiracy. Can you believe that?
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. Well, I did it part-time, but I had two quarters at Mount Hood in Portland, Oregon. And then I taught one quarter down here in Tucson to the extension. It was called public extension. It wasn't the real, it was Pima Community College, but it was not for a credit course. It was in the public invited to come lecture and speak, whatever. So I did that. So then I've done over 500 talk shows. I still do them whenever I get a call, and every once in a while I get a chance to discuss this with liberals. Boy, they don't like me, so they don't recall.
Really?
Yeah, it's really strange. When I did my talk show in Portland for 3 years on Saturdays, it was 2 hours long, and I used to beg the liberals to call in. I said, this is an arena of ideas.
Right.
And I said, if you bring in superior ideas on the air right now, I'll say this man is right and I've been wrong. I'll say it, please. They never called me. Why?
Well, I sometimes think liberals don't like facts.
I think so. Let me tell you one quick story. I was selling my books at a gun show in Phoenix, and it was late in the Sunday afternoon, an hour before everybody else was shutting down, but not me. I wait till the 4 o'clock when it's official shutdown time. And a young man walked by, I would guess late 20s, and he saw my book, The Unseen Hand, on my table. He didn't say a word until he stopped. And then he turned around and said, did you write that? And I said, yes. He said, I want to tell you something. I read your book, and I said, I want you to know that I learned more out of reading your 500-page book called The Unseen Hand, An Introduction to the Conspiratorial View of History. I've learned more in my 18 years of public education.
Wow.
He was working to complete his master's degree, and I taught him more than 18 years of his public education.
Wow, that's awesome. That's great.
That is it. That story just it really knocked me flat. I said, listen, I want you to know I wrote the book for you because I knew that he said he was going to go on for his PhD. And I said, well, you are aware they're not going to let you teach this. He said, I know. Well, that's the price he had to pay. But at least he knows.
Amazing.
So I got a website, and I can mention it, www.ralph-epperson.com, R-A-L-P-H-E-P-P-E-R-S-O-N, and you can go there. It's a catalog and a description of the various DVDs and books that I've written.
Looking at your website, it appears that you have really strong evidence that our government knew at least a week ahead of time that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor. Is that true?
Yeah, well, it's actually more than that. That's the documentation, the newspaper. When people ask me to become a friend on Facebook, I send them a copy of the front page, the top half of the front page of the Hilo, Hawaii newspaper on the Sunday, 30th of November, 1 week ahead of the 7th of December attack on Pearl Harbor.
Amazing.
And it said, attack on, as I remember, says attack on Japan, attack by Japan next weekend or something like that. So wait a minute, how come they knew but Roosevelt didn't?
Yeah, I don't believe
that.
So
the question is, but the question is far more important than that.
Yes.
If you want to spend a few minutes, I'll make it as brief as I can, which is what I try to do because this covers several chapters in my book.
Sure.
Do you want to hear it?
Absolutely, yeah.
World War One was fought, World War, to convince the world that nations cause wars. It's the first time ever that we had many nations involved. I don't know, there's six or eight, wherever it was. So it wasn't just one guy attacking, one nation attacking another, or maybe two against one. This was multiple nations on both sides.
Mm-hmm.
So the end result was the League of Nations.
Mm-hmm.
And that was signed, I think, in 1917 or so, maybe, I think it was 17. And the Treaty of Versailles, and that's it. We made the world safe for democracy. No more wars. We're going to have a world government. Well, the Senate refused to ratify the treaty. Treaties have to be ratified. Woodrow Wilson signed it as our president, and he said, listen, I'm the president. I can sign. No, you can't. So the Senate refused to ratify it. So within 3 years, the Council on Foreign Relations started planning World War II.
Wow.
Now, what do they want to do with it? Well, give us, if the League of Nations won't make it, then we'll create the United Nations and get more nations involved. Now, I don't know this for sure, but I think no one else has ever put these two wars together like I did in the unseen hand.
Wow.
And that's why this young man said, I've learned more about history in my 18, for reading your book, 500 pages, than I learned in 18 years. He'd never heard this before.
So
that's the reason we fought World War II.
Well,
the end result was the United Nations, all the nations got together, and we approved that, I guess, as a treaty, and we're now members, and we're funding something like 80% of it.
Well, let me ask a question here, because the way the mainstream historians paint this is there was this guy, Adolf Hitler, who was really evil, and he led Germany astray, and he was the one that really started World War II. But you're telling me that this was planned at a much higher level than Adolf Hitler, correct?
Oh, absolutely correct. In fact, you can know for certain. Our government allowed American businessmen to build his war machine.
Oh, please.
Did you hear what I just said?
Elaborate on that, please.
Anthony Sutton, who, by the way, is my number one historian of all time. He was just great. He actually went and dug out the records from the governments involved.
Amazing.
That's an unusual challenge, but he did it. But what he did was he said that the major American corporations built Germany's war machine. The greatest example was this. Germany had abundant coal, but no gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. You can't fight a war without gasoline. You can have tanks and airplanes and whatever, trucks and jeeps and everything else. So they needed gasoline. So there was a Standard Oil in the 30s developed the ability to convert coal to gasoline.
Oh, my.
So they signed an agreement with IG Farben. The IG Farben owned, at least at that time, it owned Bayer Aspirin. It was a huge chemical company. So they worked a deal out. We'll sell you the technology so you can make gasoline from coal. And then you give us the ability to have produce coal or gasoline in the United States and maybe other countries, wherever it was. So there was an agreement. And there were factories built by Americans in Germany all the time. And secondly, it was very, I met early in about 1960 or so, I met a POW of World War II in Germany. And he told a story. He said, listen, they built barracks for us to work in the factory. So we're working in the factory. And when the sirens went off saying that to notify the people in the city there's an American attack coming, we all ran into the factory. And they blew up the barracks and the railroad lines, and they were fixed in a matter of months or days. And they never, we felt we were safer in the factory than we were in the barracks.
Amazing.
And who decided which targets to bomb? Well, the generals. No, the generals didn't have to say. Franklin Roosevelt appointed a committee to decide which targets to. And you don't think that the Standard Oil and others said, listen, baby, while you're busy picking targets, don't pick ours.
Amazing.
Do you understand? World War II was fought and we supported both sides.
It's unbelievable.
Americans were being killed with tanks who were built by the Ford Motor Company in Germany. Why?
It's amazing.
You couldn't have a war without tanks and ammunition and bullets and rifles and things made, and they were made. Much of that technology came from the United States. There's a great book called, I've forgotten the title. Look up Antony, Antony Sutton, Sutton, and read those books.
Okay.
The man was a brilliant researcher. And by the way, they're all documented in my book, The Unseen Hand, because I read them way, way back as soon as they were published. I bought copies and then underlined them as I learned in college and underlined them and then said, let's go do the, save it. And I've saved it. And when I do a write a book, I go to the book, pick up the spots I want to cover, underline them, and then type them into a computer or a typewriter, and then talk about it. Everybody about Sutton's book, and he wrote this on page 57, and that gives you the way to check it to see if it's true.
Well, let me ask you another question then. Are you saying that the Panzer tanks and the Tiger tanks were actually built by the Americans?
Well, that's one I can't really prove concretely. I do know that Ford had a motor company, I believe, in Germany. But in fact, there's a picture of Henry Ford in Detroit being awarded by two German ambassadors to the United States for supporting Adolf Hitler. Henry Ford. Well, Henry Ford, what are you doing?
Amazing.
And I've got the picture of a DVD in my. You can find it on the internet.
So,
that opens up a whole other story about why the bankers in America decided to bankrupt Henry Ford, and when they tried with the crash in 1920, I'll make it brief, and they were going to bankrupt him because Henry Ford never borrowed money from the bankers. We don't want that.
No,
other automakers were borrowing billions of dollars, but Henry Ford had worked it out where he said, listen, I'll sell you the cars, but you don't pay for them until you sell them. And that he didn't borrow money. He saved billions of dollars.
Interesting.
And the banker said no. So Henry Ford, I presume the reason he liked Germany, well, I won't get into that. That's another story. But anyway, this is what's been going on for at least 1782 or whatever it was when ahead.
Let me ask you some questions here. So Henry Ford was awarded by the Nazis for supporting them. So
Adolf Hitler, yes.
Adolf Hitler. So, but the bankers were also against Henry Ford, correct?
Well, they did that. Yeah, they let me tell you. Okay, let's get into it.
Okay.
Henry Ford was told after the bankers came after him. I don't know when he got the award. It might have been years later. Maybe, in fact, let's probably say the reason he did support Hitler was because, well, I'll tell you the story. He learned that the crash of 1920 was caused by the bankers to force him to borrow money. So he then apparently someone told him that the banker, hold on, this is tough. Hold on, America, just listen. The bankers were Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
And that got him into the protocols of the learned elders of Zion. And he read that and believed it was true. And so he bought the Dearborn Independent, where he might have factories in Detroit, but I think his offices were in Dearborn. So he had maybe even a factory there. So he bought the Dearborn Independent and started reprinting the protocols of the learned elders of Zion so that people would read it all about the plans of this conspiracy to take over and run major worlds and everything else. But of course they were Jews. So then he read that Hitler was opposed to the Jews, and he said, boy, he's kicking the Jews out of his country, therefore he's probably kicking the Jewish bankers out as well. So that's when he supported them. And I would gather. And by the way, just for the sake of argument, those who believe in a Jewish conspiracy, and there's a lot of people even in America today still believe this, it is a bold-faced lie. It's not true, period.
Is it because of this protocol of the elders of Zion?
If someone found them apparently in some hotel and waited, translated them from whatever language they were in into, I guess, English or French or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And they were called the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion. Now, let's talk about Zionism.
Mm-hmm.
What is Zionism? Zionism is a desire, in fact, a biblical belief that someday the Jews would return to Zion, their homeland in Israel.
Mm-hmm.
That's all that it is. And Lord Balfour, who was the Prime Minister of England, promised the Rothschilds, who one of these, quote, Jewish bankers, the Rothschilds, by the way, are one of 12. We'll cover that in a minute. There's not just the Rothschilds. There's 11 others. So now he believed that this was going on. And so I was going to have a point, and I stopped about, oh, he learned about the Rothschilds and the protocols. Now, the learned elders of Zion mean people in favor of creating the Zion state.
Mm-hmm.
They got it in 1947. This is why I don't understand why, even just a few minutes ago on the news report, someone's talking about, boy, those people in Palestine are being butchered by the Jews. And listen, if they want to protest that, it was the United Nations that set Israel up.
Right.
It's an act of them. If they want to protest it, why don't they go to the United Nations? They can get the Jews kicked out. They're the ones that said go there.
Hmm.
So Zionism is over. They got what they wanted. A state of Israel in a place where the Palestinians live, where they claim the original tribes of Judah, the Jews were living, the 12 tribes, wherever it was. So once again, the whole thing's bogus. Let me just say this in summary form.
Okay.
This conspiracy is at least 5,000 years old, maybe even older. I can't trace it back further than that, but I can trace it to 5,000 years ago. There's been one major conspiracy working in the world, not just the United States, but working in the world to consolidate and get control of various nations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people say, oh, let's cover it. Let me mention the 12 other bankers. There's 12 bankers. Now, how did I learn that? I believe, like everyone else, until I learned this, that the Rothschilds owned the banks and everything else, and they were in charge of all the central banks of the. And then I read Dr. Carol Quigley. Does that name ring a bell?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay, you know the story behind his book?
Please tell us.
Well, let's go back to 1992. Well, actually, we go back before that. Little Billy Clinton was born in Arkansas, lived near the Capitol. I think later he moved from Hope to something, Little Rock, where it was. And he got a desire to become get into politics. So he did. He met William Fulbright, one of the two Senate Democrat, and he told him he wanted to go to politics. And Fulbright realized he was a very intelligent young man, high grades and everything else. So they said, listen, here's what you need to do. You need to go to Georgetown University in Washington, D.C., and learn from Dr. Carol Quigley.
Mm-hmm.
So Clinton said, okay, good, I'll do that. And then he said, I'll go there to Georgetown. I might have even gotten a scholarship. I don't know. But anyway, he went to Georgetown from 64 to 68. So one of the professors that he was told to look into was Dr. Carol Quigley, who was a Harvard-trained PhD, which means that a liberal establishment PhD supports all the programs and everything else. So he learned from him. During sometime in 1966, now notice he went there from 64 to 68, so someplace in that 66 year, Quigley published his book called Tragedy and Hope.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know for certain that he had to read the book. I got an article someone sent me from the Georgetown Alumnus, whatever it's called, magazine, talked about the class of 25 years later or so, anyway, it's 88 or something, and there's little Billy Clinton, and it says that he attended, his book, Treasure and Hope, was published in 1996, and it was required reading in his course. So apparently Quigley just taught one course, or maybe two or something, not very much. So we know that Clinton read the book, Tragedy and Hope. He was required to read it, mm-hmm. according to the Alumni magazine. So now what did he read? When you go to read the book, okay, let me take the next step. In 1992, when he was getting the nomination of the Democrat Party, little Billy Clinton went on live national television. At that time, there may be four channels, the NBC, CBS, or ABC, and maybe CNN or maybe one of the others. So there was all, and they were all on at the same time. If you had a TV set in 1992, you didn't get to see Roseanne and the Father Knows Best and everybody, all the other programs. You got to watch Clinton. So nationwide, he's talking to the American people. Most people were watching the convention. And here he gets up there and says, I want to tell you about two people. I want to thank them for getting me into politics. One was John Kennedy, and the second was Dr. Carol Quigley. Now, wait a minute. Everybody knows who John Kennedy is. Why did he mention Quigley? I did not hear him say that because I didn't care about Clinton and his, speech. I bet within half an hour of that phone call, I must have had a dozen phone calls. Did you hear what Clint just said? And I said, no. He said he praised the Dr. Quigley. I said, you're kidding me. So sure enough, I went. The next day, they had a copy of his speech, verbatim, word for word. I found where he said this. And then I later on found he had put it in his book that he wrote called Putting People First. So he said in page 218 or 17, it says, I want to thank two people for getting it. So I quote, now, you can find it. If you can't find the New York Times or the speech or a video of it, you can go to read his own book. He quoted the whole speech. Now, who's Quigley? What did he teach him? Quigley made the claim in his book that for 2 years, he was made privy to the secret papers of the Royal Institute of International Affairs. That's the basic group running England today.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, I don't know how he got it. Later on, I did find out he named the man who told him, but during the book, he didn't say that. So he goes on to say, there on page 950, there does exist and has existed for a generation. Now, 1966 minus approximately 40 is 1926. So he learned about them because they were formed sometime in 1920. So they created the Council on Foreign Relations. It was created by the bankers in Europe, international bank, primarily the English. So he said there does exist and has existed for at least a generation an Anglophile international network. Anglophile. Anglo means English, primarily English. Mm-hmm. File means, Anglophile, I guess, means the group or something. Mm-hmm. Network, international. So it's not only Anglo, it may be run by the English, but it's international.
Mm-hmm.
And in later on in the book, he says that this group already controls the economies of the world in 1966.
Hmm.
So Clinton told us that he had no aversion to what it did in planning wars and revolutions and depressions. So wait a minute. Clinton is not a conspiracy theorist. He's a conspiracy realist. And it was the CFR and the Royal Institute that elected him in 1992. You understand? He admitted it with his own mouth. And there's probably 10 people in the country that know that. That's the problem. Dan Rather didn't explain. He broke our Jenny. They didn't say, oh, by the way, what did he really, who's Dr. Carroll? They didn't talk about Quigley. And then also in the book, he said that there are 12 banking families who own all of the central banks, including the Federal Reserve. And he listed them by name, only last name, like the Warburgs and the Rockefeller, not the Rockefellers, but the Morgans. And then he mentioned the Rothschilds. Rothschilds and Morgans and the Warburgs are those three that come to mind right away. But he named the other. Now, I've been researching central banks and looking into it since at least the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw that list, I did not recognize 8 of those banking names.
No kidding.
Which means they're buried, baby. They're literally buried. You're not supposed to know about them, but we are supposed to know about the Rothschilds. We blame them for all these wars and revolutions, and they take the rocks and throw the stones, and they did this and that. No, 12 banking families, and they own all. And by the way, he admitted they make plans for the world in secret meetings. Quigley said this in his book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is Quigley blowing smoke? No. He was trained by the Harvard liberal establishment and then got into the Georgetown University. Oh, by the way, then one of the members of the Royal Institute of International Affairs was Cecil Rhodes. Now, we don't know much about him in America, but Cecil Rhodes was connected to the Bank Eastern. He went to South Africa and Zimbabwe, I guess it's called now, and he took over the gold and diamond mines who apparently were run by the Dutch. He took them over with the thing called the Boer War, B-O-E-R, Boer War. And the reason, that means the English family, my parents, sent their soldiers down to South Africa, and I guess other Rhodesia was north of there. They fought a war against the Dutch, and English soldiers died to give Cecil Rhodes the diamond and gold mines. Oh, I'm sure the parents knew that, and they didn't mind their children being killed in a war to get control of the diamond mines by Cecil Rhodes. And the country, I don't know what it was called before, but one of the countries that was involved was later changed to the name of Rhodesia. 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 Now it's called Zimbabwe. But he had a nation named after him. I'll be darned. How many other people? Have you had your nation named after you yet? Have you gotten yours?
I'm working on it.
They're working on it. Okay, soon we'll get one, I'm sure. Named Snyderville or something,
exactly.
No doubt. But can you see how, but this is what Quigley was, his book should be read by, well, you don't have to read the book. It's like 1,000 pages. It's very boring. If you want to read about the book, buy The Unseen Hand.
Okay.
Because I cover this all adequately to show you. But I give you the sources. You can find it, the references yourself by reading the book. Tragedy and Hope. Go to a Google and search it on the books, and you see the book is still there. There's Dr. Carroll Quigley and everything else.
Now, wasn't Carroll Quigley somewhat communist in his views, and he was also somewhat satanic, I think, wasn't he?
Well, you know, I don't know if that's true. I stopped with the... he did write a second book called The Liberal Establishment or something. And there he, because in the book he said that he had no aversion to many of its functions or operations, I think he said. So there were some things he disagreed with, and basically he agreed with them. So he got into a radio debate with Gary Allen and Larry Abraham. And it was him and these three of them were on, I guess it may be even a fourth one, were on a debate. And Larry Abraham made such an impact by challenging him because he praised the CFR and the, you know, that was created by them. And, Abraham told him, listen, you don't know what they're doing. You need to join or at least find out what they're doing. And I'm telling you, then you want to get out. And so he listened to Abraham. Apparently, he checked it out and found out that Abraham was right and Gary Allen were right. And so he wrote a second book. He said, I continue to support their goals, but not their methods. Hmm. Now, by the way, that book was written way before Clinton even got into the Democratic nomination. So Quigley stopped and said, I don't approve of their methods. But Clinton's never done that. That means he has no aversion not only to the way their goals, but also their methods of planning wars and depressions and revolutions. Thank you, Bill. Thank you very much.
Well, let me ask you a question. What reason would these people have for planning and essentially wanting to have World War II?
The purpose was to convince the world that nations cause wars. Now, I want to amend that. Even though the United Nations was created for that purpose, it's never functioned as a world government, has it?
Not really.
So, now, later research, I thought that was a failure then of the people that planned it, and that they were going to, I later on decided, well, what they're going to do is, instead of giving this new world order to us piece by piece, they're going to bring it to us step by step, two steps forward, one step back. And so and the last thing, one of the things I've just discovered years ago, maybe 3-4 years ago, this conspiracy does not want a world government.
It doesn't?
Does not. Now, let me explain. Why. Now, this is, you say you want to talk about the Illuminati. Let's talk about the Illuminati. When you read about the Illuminati from the writers Robeson and Abbey Berryowell, who were researching them at the time, they said they're out to destroy religion. They're out to destroy the family. They're out to destroy nations, meaning borders. And they're out to destroy government.
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. Karl Marx, who was a member of the Illuminati under other names. When the Illuminati finally dissolved, before that happened, Weishaupt wrote that you must surface later, but under other names. And I got the 100th anniversary copy of the Communist Manifesto written by Engels and Marx. And in there you read that in the beginning of the introduction that the Communist Party was an offshoot of the Communist League, which is an offshoot of the Parisian Outlaws League, which was an offshoot of Bavarian immigrants. Who were the Bavarian immigrants? The Illuminati. Now, once again, Marx wrote in his book, The Manifesto, they wanted to destroy nations, religion, families, private property, etc., and government. Now, you want to know why they want to dissolve government?
Well, I thought it was to create a one-world government, but maybe not.
Let me tell you why. I said a few minutes ago, I believe, forgive me, I do too many talk shows, but I think I just told you that this conspiracy is 5,000 years old. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you what started this whole process. Now, this is biblically. You say, oh, wait a minute, I don't believe in the Bible. It doesn't matter. Forgive me, I don't mean to say it that way. What you believe about the Bible is not the key to this. You might not agree with it, but I'm telling you, the conspiracy believes in it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me go to that. Let's go back to what the first book of the Bible says in Genesis. Because the Bible says that there was a war in heaven,
mm-hmm.
and Satan took a third of the angels and fought against Michael and the other two-thirds, and that Michael won, mm-hmm. two-thirds to one-third. And so God banished Satan to the earth. Right? Mm-hmm. And the angels, I believe, who went with him, the rebellious angels, became the demons that some people believe. I leave it open. I've not met anyone that I is a demon, but that's fine. Let's just say, because the battle is really Satan. So Satan, then, the next time he shows up was in the garden. Well, then he created man, and he created Adam, and Santa put him in the garden, and then he created Eve, and then he told both of them that you could, what you need for food is on the trees in the garden, except for two. One is called the Tree of Life, and I believe that's another subject, but let's just say the second one is the key. The second is you are not to eat from the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, what does that mean? What tree? It's been characterized as an apple. No, it's not. That's, you know, the artist gave Eve an apple. She bit into an apple. No, she didn't. Here's what Satan said to her. Listen, God was not telling you the truth. You can know good and evil, and you can decide for yourself. And then ye shall be as gods. Now, that's biblical. Now, you say, I don't believe that's a fairy tale. I'm telling you, this conspiracy believes it.
Mm-hmm.
They not, might not believe the rest of it, but I'm telling you, this is the secret. Now, let's finish with that. Why do they want? Here's the way this conspiracy thinks. They say, listen, God, I know you created me and you gave me freedom of choice. And then you started teaching me, after we were banished, morality in such things like the Bible and in the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments are, thou shalt not and thou shalt do. Which means, wait a minute, God, you gave me free choice and now you're restricting my free choice. Mm-hmm. That's not very nice. You must be a tyrant. Now, understand, I can understand what you're saying, but why did God do that? He knew that if Adam and Eve and mankind made up their own mind, they would legalize or make it moral to murder, to rape, to pillage, to not have families, to let them, whatever they wanted to do. That's what Satan offered Adam and Eve. The power to know good and evil, and ye shall be as gods, each one individually making up their minds. Guess what the New World Order is on the back of our dollar bill? It's going to be no government, because government is a tyrant. Government in because of a belief in God. Now, why do people create government? To protect their inalienable rights to life, freedom, and property. We the whole other subject we'll cover later. But there's three rights specified in the Declaration. I'm going to amend two of them because it's life, freedom, and property. But anyway, and then the Ninth Amendment says if we didn't list it as one of our rights, that doesn't mean we don't have others. So we've got all sorts of rights, unalienable rights. So now, they created government. We create government to protect it. If we let my neighbors, who have already started stealing from me because our young people believe, well, listen, you've got stuff and I don't have any, so I can steal from you, and I've experienced it. I've lived here for 40 years in this house, never had a problem until recently. People are stealing from me. I'm by myself, and when my car's not here, they steal from my backyard, or they can't get in the house, of course. But that's okay. They stole a tire off my car when I was touring the country. They
wow.
thought, well, gee, you've got tires and I don't have any, so we'll take it. You've got money to replace it. So this is where we are. Now stop and think about this. Let's talk about a world without government. As Marx wrote, government would wither and die. That's what Weishaupt started the Illuminati. That's what they believe in. Read Proofs of a Conspiracy by Robeson, and even the Abbey Burywell says this, but his books are a little bit longer than the Proofs book, but he came up with the same conclusion independently of John Robeson. But he said, listen, here's what we're going to do. And let's say they achieve this goal, and we'll now connect it after this to the New World Order. Let's say this. Let's say that we live in a world where each man makes a decision what's right and wrong. Our young people are being taught this in our schools under situation ethics, which teaches that each man is free to decide for himself what's right and wrong. That's why young people say to their parents, you brought on all these rules and regulations. I like blowing my mind with dope and drugs and, you know, messing around with and stealing things and shoplifting or whatever else. I like that. That's fun. Isn't that what's happening in America today? Look around you. We're being taught each man should decide for himself, and that's what we're doing. Little Ralphie's got a lot of money because I'm living in this house, and I live in a nice, it's not a nice, it's just a typical average American neighborhood. I live on a cul-de-sac street, which I thought would be to my advantage because there's only one way in and one way out. But it doesn't matter, and people still drive by and steal from me and whatever they can. And, you know, okay, now, here we go with situation ethics. Now, that teaches our young people, because it's part of the humanist religion. A religion called humanism? Oh, yes. And you say, I don't ever heard of this. Well, what you need to do is Google it. Humanist manifestos 1, 2, and 3. And you'll read about the same thing that Weishaupt said. We got to destroy government. We can't have evolution's true. We all are animals. We have no morality. No man has the right to tell me what to do. I don't think it gets into government, but you can read what humanism teaches, and that's the official religion of this nation. We don't like Christianity. We don't like the Jews. We don't like the Muslims. But boy, we'll tolerate a religion in our schools being taught as known as humanism. Please, we need to study humanism. It's happening right in front of us. This is why our children decide to murder their young people, their fellow young students. Why? Because they believe, well, first of all, they get depressed because they start experimenting with drugs. And that's another story we need to get into. Why do we have drugs in this country? That's another story. We'll do that if we have time. Anyway, they blow their mind with drugs, and they get depressed, and they go see a psychiatrist. And what's the matter? I don't like my mommy. She's cruel to me. She makes me pick up after me, and she tells me not to smoke dope when I want to. And I can't come in at 11 o'clock, and I can't. So, okay, I'll tell you what. I'll give you some medication. Now, here's the challenge for you and your listeners. Start listening to the commercials by the drug company. I'll talk pharmacy companies, not the drug company. And listen to the drugs. Hey, listen, you got to buy this Framistan. It's going to cure your hangnails. However, there are some symptoms, one of which is a thought of suicide. What? Right.
Yep. A lot of them.
I want to cure my hangnails, and I'm going to start wanting to commit suicide. Yes. I'm telling you, and then secondly, when these young people do this, we can't find out they're on drugs or what drugs the doctors prescribed. Do you understand? I'm starting a one-man crusade on Facebook. Please, we got to get this stopped control. The police have got to have the right to get a court order to go to the doctor and say, what drugs were you giving the man who just shot 17 students? And I don't think we ever,
that.
I don't know, because it's called what the patient-doctor
privilege, patient-doctor.
Privilege, okay, which means doctors can't release information except to the parents, maybe, and the child, and then when the child becomes an adult, they can't even tell mom and dad about it anymore. That's got to stop. Not for public information, but we got to learn these drugs that these young people who get depressed because they've been blowing their minds with drugs, and then they go to the doctor, parents say, well, wait a minute, you're depressed. I don't know why, but it can't be the drugs, but I'll send you to a psychiatrist. Or maybe I don't know which one can prescribe. One of those can and one can't.
Psychiatrist.
But that's where the problem is. It's not in the NRA. It's in the solution being offered by our doctors.
It's the drugs.
Notice one more thing. This last guy reversed a trend. Notice in every other shooting, generally, I believe it's applicable to all, they go in there with two weapons. One might be an AR-15 or whatever it is. You know, that kind of weapon, you can fire a lot of shots. But then there's also a pistol. So they shoot and kill people, and then when they run out of ammunition, they commit suicide. Why? We need to find out if that young man was being treated by a psychiatrist who gave him drugs, and one of the symptoms is committing suicide. Start listening. You'll see it. Not everyone. Some of them don't list it, but when they list it, it's, you know, you can have heart attacks, or you can die early, thoughts of committing suicide. I'm telling you, I bet at least half of the drugs that they're asking you to take give you a thought of suicide. There's statistics out about the number of students committing suicide between like 15 and 18 or 19, wherever it is. And like 20 years ago, there were 7 of them. Now there's in the hundreds or even thousands. Why? Only Ralph Epperson's one. Well, maybe there's others. I hope that there are now. But I'm doing what I can on Facebook to get people aware of that. Start looking into this and getting our Congress to say, listen, we need to give the police department the authority by going to a judge, if they have to get a warrant, to go to the doctor and say, here's a warrant asking you to reveal the drugs, if any, you gave to the shooter. And then the police will know that, and they can make it public. And then we can start saying to the pharmacy companies, don't put drugs out there that ask people to get, might have a thought of suicide. I took off more than you wanted to talk about. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's fine. Some of these drugs also, if you listen real close, besides suicide, I believe they say something about aggression or something along those lines.
Well, that could be, yeah. I have to admit, I'm tuned into suicide, but maybe I should pay a little more attention. But I sit here like most people, and I don't watch a lot of TV, but when I do, there's someone standing in front of a doctor,
always.
Maybe even in a coat or whatever. Hey, I'm a beautiful blonde. Yeah, we know that we should trust beautiful blondes, so they always get a beautiful blonde. And she's young and attractive. Hey, listen, guys, you got to try this pharmacope stuff here called Framistan, and you take that and it'll cure your hangnails. But also it might give you thoughts of suicide. But if it does, and even if you die, call us and let us know. Huh? That's the one thing they haven't talked about, death. But there are thoughts of death and or suicide.
So let me back up a little bit, because what you're saying is that all the people that are saying that the New World Order wants to create a one-world government, this tyranny, this 1984 tyranny, that's not the case at all, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
They want to completely wipe out all government, period?
Yes.
That would be total
chaos.
Okay,
you want to keep going with this?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, that would be total chaos, right? Wouldn't?
No. This is going to get heavy. Are you ready for this? How
sure.
much more time we got?
We got about 15 minutes.
Well, I'll start. I might not be able to finish, but let me tell you.
We can do another show. We can do another show someday, right?
Okay. Well, we'd like to do that. There's other things we need to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
But let's go ahead. Let's go back to the back of the dollar bill. We got two seals. They're both circles, and there's an eagle on one side and a pyramid on the other.
Yeah.
Now, a seal is a way to document a document or a treaty or a letter or something between. In the old days, the King A would send a letter to King B. He would fold it and then melt wax on it, and then as it starts to dry, he would stick his ring in it. And his ring was had, you know, indentations in it, up, I don't know what to call it, but up, you know, part up mm-hmm. and down. And then he'd leave it, and the king that got it will say that obviously the king signed it with the ring. And if someone had opened it to change it or something, the wax seal would be broken, and you can't reproduce the king's ring unless you had one yourself, some king between. But then that's if it was broken, the guy, King B, would realize that maybe it's been tampered with. He'd go back to King A and send it again or something. Mm. So, well, we have two seals. Oh, yeah, baby, we're big. We're bigly. Let's just ask you this. What do we need a second seal for?
Don't know.
When you go to the second seal, our secret destiny is contained therein. Let's go to I'll do this without even getting a dollar bill out, and if you could get one there or whatever. But let's talk about, there's a pyramid there with an all-seeing eye above it,
right,
radiating out, and then there's a space between the pyramid and the all-seeing eye. And then in Latin it says, Annuit Septis Novus Ordo Seclorum.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the government wants you to believe he, meaning God, has smiled on our undertakings and then down the belief, a new order of the ages. No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Novos is Latin for new. Ordo is Latin for order. Septus. That's the one we got. There's two words on the top. Annuit septus. Annuit is the announcing of, forgive me, now we go to the other side, septus, which is the conception of or the announcement of, I actually use the announcement of, then novus ordo seclorum. Novus, new, ordo, order, seclorum, meaning secular. Look it up in your dictionary. It's a worldview without God. So the new world, announcing the birth of the new world order. Notice the eye is not on the pyramid yet. So you're announcing the birth of, which means in 1776, on the bottom of the pyramid, you'll read the Roman numerals, 17. It means we're declaring an independent nation. It's going to lead us to this new world order. Someday the eye will land on the pyramid, and when it does, the new world order will be an adult. Hmm. Now, what is the new world order?
Well, I thought it was a global government, a tyranny.
Yes. Little Ralphie wrote a book in 1990 called The New World Order. It was the first one that I can find in 5,000 years that told you what the new, well, at least since it was 1787 and the Great Seal was founded, no one else has told us what it means. Little Ralphie found out what it means. Announcing the birth of what's the new world order. I document that with the people in favor of the new world order. It's going to be a world without government. Oh, I don't believe that, Ralph. Oh, our founding fathers didn't do that to us. Oh, yes, they did. It was approved unanimously. We don't need a second seal. Yes, we do, to announce our secret destiny. When the eye lands on the pyramid. Now, how can I prove? This will give you something to write down, and then maybe we probably should get into the other stuff because it'll take too long. But let's get into this. I'll give you one way you can confirm this conspiracy is at least 5,000 years old. Little Ralphie, years ago, started noticing a very strange phenomenon amongst the pictures I was using in my letter. When I used to make slide lectures for my classes in my lectures whenever I spoke at our seminar, whatever it was. So I started finding pictures, and there was something, probably 20 or 25, people giving a sign like Napoleon when he puts his fist inside his left the lapel of his suit or a jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And I started seeing that, but also saw it in another form where he's got the fingers curled back and the thumb in the pocket of the palm, and then they put that over the heart.
Mm-hmm.
And what is it? It's called the lion's paw.
Ah.
And the first one I found was Khufu, the Egyptian pharaoh who built the great pyramid of Cheops.
Interesting.
The pyramid of Cheops, Khufu, it's the language, it's Khufu in Egypt, I think, and Cheops in Greece, so it depends on where you find it, but it's either Khufu or Cheops. But anyway, this man built the pyramid. What's the pyramid? Even the Egyptologists today claim it was not built as a tomb for the pharaoh. It was built for the temple of initiation. Into what? The ancient mystery religion of Satan worship. Oh, no, wait a minute, Ralph. That can't be our pyramid. No, what is our pyramid? You can't find out. They won't tell you. Why won't they tell you what the pyramid means? So now let's go. Here's Khufu doing it. And then his high priest named Kal, K-A-L. I found a picture of him in my newspaper, clipped it out and saved it. And then I found another pharaoh. I've got an unusual name, Hippopotamus, or something like that. He's giving the same sign. In fact, there's about three statues of him doing it. And then I started finding Napoleon's a good example. He's giving the same sign. And then Karl Marx is giving the same sign. And Joseph Stalin, Karl Marx, the father of communism, Joseph Stalin, the butcher of 40 million Russians,
mm-hmm.
and Vladimir Lenin's giving the same sign, Leon Trotsky, the communist, all three of these men are giving the same sign. Why? And then Senator Ted Cruz. Oh, now, wait a minute, Rob. Come on, you're really stretching it. No. Google images and look for Senator or just even Ted Cruz and start looking, and you'll find two different pictures of him giving this 5,000-year-old sign.
So it's when they put the left hand inside their jacket? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's it. Now, you can, when you find a picture of Napoleon, you'll see it out in the open. But others have actually shown it as being the whole. It's a, you curl your fingers and then tuck your thumb into the palm and then place that palm and the curled fingers over your heart. That's the lion's paw. But you could also slip it inside. But I can confirm it's also John Wilkes Booth gave the same sign.
Really?
Yes. Why would he do that?
He was.
I'm telling you, do this. Google videos and search the lion's paw and watch it for 45 minutes. It'll show you the Pat Robertson gave the same sign. Pat Robertson's the Christian television evangelist. Pat Robertson.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
It's on. I know it's on the cover of Time magazine. Now you say, "Oh, he didn't know." That's the official word coming out of the Robertson's committee, or wherever it is, church, or wherever it was. He didn't know. There's a second picture of him doing the same thing.
Wow.
Two pictures. Two, not one, but two. Why?
Wow.
Why, Pat? You just admitted you're becoming an initiate like Napoleon of the ancient mystery religion, 6,000 years old.
Wow.
Why? George Washington did the same thing by tucking his palm inside his coat in a portrait. Now, wait a minute. It's not a picture, Ralph. I have to admit, it's not a picture. It's a portrait. But the key to this is this. That picture is in the official biography of a group, a thing called the National Memorial Association of Washington in Washington, D.C. Google that, and you'll see a big building they built with a huge obelisk filled with offices, and the Bible that all of these Reagans and others say their pledge or where the oath of office comes on top of a Masonic Bible. And George Washington was a Mason. So now, I don't know that he was a member of the initiate, but I know this. Let's finish with Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz, this sign is also given by Masons, and you'll see inside my video, you'll see Masons admitting that. It's part of their signs as well. Hmm. That's documentable. Now, Ted Cruz, if he was giving this sign as a Mason, running for the presidency, should have been endorsed by Bob Dole. Bob Dole's still alive. In fact, he was there at Clinton's inauguration. He's getting old now, sitting in a wheelchair. Bob Dole was a, or is, a 33rd degree Mason. Hmm. And Masons take oaths to support fellow Masons. So why didn't he support Ted Cruz? In my documentation, you'll see the documentation twice in separate occasions. Dole mocked Senator Cruz. Wait a minute. Dole didn't know he was a Mason? Well, maybe he's not a Mason. Maybe he's an actual initiate, meaning Cruz, of the ancient mystery religion. He not only did this once, he did it twice. And if you look carefully, you can see the two different times in the Bob Dole, in the Ted Cruz Google images. Why? Watch the video, please. I can prove it's at least 5,000 years old.
So we should Google lion's paw.
Google video. The lion, it's on the internet right now.
Okay.
And it'll show up in a list of various things about the lion's paw. And you'll see one with the lion and the words, the lion's paw, in the little thumbnail sketch, something about Ralph Epperson. Click on that and please sit down and watch it. Don't get bored. Watch the whole thing. I ask you to be on a jury. Please, this is important. Why would the Masons admit that George Washington was possibly an initiate of the ancient mystery religion? Why?
Because he was, I guess.
Well, maybe so. I cannot prove it because I also know he's a Mason, and they're very proud of him.
Wasn't,
I'm telling you, this thing is serious.
Wasn't Benjamin Franklin also satanic, and he was in the Hellfire Club, and they found bodies under his home. He had another home in England. Have you heard anything about this?
Yes, I watched it on. They I was on that it was a show called the Secrets of the Founding Fathers, and Little Rafi makes an appearance on that. It's a 2-hour segment. I had maybe 10 minutes on it, but at least I was on there. They put Rafi, a video of me, and they put the words Ralph Epperson, the New World Order book, underneath me. So it was helpful to get people, I've never heard this before. I better buy his book, and that's so what I worked out. So Little Rafi appeared. In that video, they documented the fact they went to England, found out who was putting these hellfire clubs on inside a building and a bunch of caves and a tall tower, and the women and they were in charge were talking about what they did there, and there was prostitutes and sexual activity and everything else. And then they showed there's a house where Franklin lived when he was in London, and there's a plaque on it. This is the address where, because he was the ambassador to England for a time during the American Revolution, or maybe before. So they marked the building. You'd go there and see it, and there it is. And they dug up in the basement and found bones. But they said, listen, the person that rented this building before was a doctor who bought skeletons to learn about anatomy. So that might, once again, that could be a cover. We don't know, but at least that was the way they explained it on this documentary.
Sounds like a cover to me, but...
Well, we don't know. We can't say that, but I'll give you this. When the next time you decide you want to call Ralph Epperson, let's get into Ben Franklin and talk about him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would let's plan on talking next month in April, okay?
Call me when you can, and we'll set up the appointment.
I'll send you an email and give you a specific date, and we'll work it out. Now, how can people get your books? Can they order them on Amazon, or do we get them from your website? Amazon, okay.
Both. Yeah, my prices on the Amazon are comparable on my catalog, but this way you can get it sent there, and you can do the same thing to me. But you got to send me a check or a cash or money order.
Okay.
But you go to my website and browse. If you do nothing else, just browse, and you'll learn things. That's what this is all about. I've said this. I'm a teacher. I'm trying to get students to listen.
Absolutely.
And that's the answer. The answer we got. We're in trouble. This country's in very serious trouble. And only I would say only a lot of people are doing this. But I'm telling you, we've got to educate people. The American people know there's something wrong. And they're looking. They believe Trump is the answer. I don't know yet about Trump. That's another story. Maybe the next time we talk, we'll get into Trump.
That's very good.
But let's leave it at that. But they know, and they're pleased. They found someone to stand up for them. Middle America that's been left in the swamps.
Yes.
And so, but they don't know why. That's what I've been trying to do for 50 years of my life.
Well, Ralph, thank you. It's been a fascinating show we just touched on. And what I'll do is I'll order The Hidden Hand, either from
Unseen Hand.
Because I think that's probably your main book, right?
Yes. Well, that and my second book, The New World Order. The other two were interesting, but
Okay.
Don't read the fourth one. That'll scare you out of your socks.
Okay.
But when we talk about Franklin, I'm going to really scare you, because I'm going to tell you things no one in this nation is saying except me. So let's plan on that when you're ready in April.
Okay, great. Thanks, Ralph. Have a great
My pleasure.
Evening.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.